in New York. It was pretty rough. But anyway, we finally landed in New York at the port. There's other boats there too. And they were embarking. I was walking down the gangplank with my duffel bag on my right side. At the foot of the gangplank, there was a table with the enlisted people sitting there checking out the names of the people. So, with the duffel bag on my right side and the table on the right side, I didn't see the people. You're supposed to call off your name and let them record it. So I call off my name. They couldn't hear it, and I didn't care if they heard it or not. I just wanted to get off the damn boat, you know, get home again. So I see somebody, a girl running after me, a GI. And she stops me, says, "What's your name?" I look at her. Before I could give her my name, she said, "Jake." She grabbed me, kissed me, and all the soldiers on the boat on both sides, there's another boat on the other side of the dock, they started yelling and shouting and laughing, you know, just like a movie scene. Imagine that, a girl I knew stopped me to want to find out what my name was. She was from Pittsburgh, by the way. Uh-huh. Name was Rose, I don't know the last name. That was something, just like the boy I told you about.
Piccadilly.
Stopped me because they didn't get my name, and she has to run after me to find out who left, and it happened to be someone I knew. One in a million.
Yeah, two times. Between Piccadilly and
the howl went up when another girl kissed his soldier in front of all those guys. It was something. I never forgot that. I didn't see her since. Giddy Weinberger was a friend of hers. We had a party before we left, and she was at this party, this same girl.
Okay.
So it's quite a coincidence.
Pittsburgh Section, National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History 2. Beth Frisch, here with Jake Weinberg, and it's June 11th, 1993.
Right.
And this is our third day of interview. All right. Maybe we can backtrack a little.
Start again.
Okay, I wanted to backtrack a little. They had suggested that we ask a little more about Ida Dannenberg. If you can give us a little more details.
On what?
About Ida Dannenberg. You had mentioned her as kind of
I can't give much detail except the fact that I don't know if I mentioned previously that my mother was a dressmaker. Mm-hmm. And in those days, people didn't go between the apartments or pick out a dress that they liked and wear. They had to make their own dresses. So my mother, as I said, was a dressmaker, and she needed help. And she had this woman, Ida Dannenberg, help her. And Ida was with her, my mother, for quite a long period of time, and she's like part of the family. And I grew up, we were so attached to Ida that we called her Aunt Ida. And she, after she grew older and didn't, no longer act as a dressmaker for my mother, she used to come in on personal visits, and that's about all I can tell you.
Do you know anything about her family, or where she lived, or how she met?
She was
your
a single woman, never married, didn't have no children, and she had a sister and some other relatives here, but I wasn't familiar with those people, just Ida herself.
You said she was with you for about 20 years.
How
many years did you say she worked for your mother? Or she just was always there?
The number of years I couldn't say. My mother was a young girl when she was married at 16. And she became a dresser, I guess, a few years after that, in her late early 20s, perhaps. And she probably was there for... it's a wild guess if I say anything.
Okay, fair enough. Also want to know in general, what was it like to be a civil engineer and be Jewish? There weren't many.
What was it like to be Jewish?
And be a civil engineer.
Be an engineer.
I gather there weren't many.
And when I first decided I wanted to be an engineer, it was because I had a little background working with my father, fixing up the house and so forth. And I thought once it'd be nice to be a doctor, but in those days, things were, economic conditions were very bad. And I saw there's no hope to even go into medical school. So I figured if I became an engineer, I could get a job even as a laborer, no disgrace. So, why?
What did you encounter
Well, I just want to tell you, at that time, I didn't know of any Jew who was an engineer at the time. But that didn't stop me. I figured I'm going to go to engineering school, be an engineer. So when I finally did go to college, become an engineer, I realized that there are very few, if any, engineers in the area. There must have been Jews or engineers, but I didn't know of any.
Mm-hmm. Not in Pittsburgh.
I mean, in the local area, yes. It wasn't common for a Jew to go into engineering. You heard about Jews going to medical field or law or business. That was a special field. But I went to school, graduated, and I didn't have any trouble getting jobs in engineer.
Did you feel comfortable saying that you were Jewish, telling people, did they?
I was very comfortable. It didn't bother me one bit. Fact is, I got along better with people when I knew I was observant and I was Jewish. Maybe I was a little bit different than what they're accustomed to, but it didn't make any difference. Fact is, when I got a job at Blahnik's, up in Blahnik's, Pennsylvania, the man who interviewed me was Mr. McCarthy. They wanted to know what school I graduated from, maybe tech, what did you do? I told them what I did previously, worked for the Corps of Engineers and other places.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said, how much do you want? That was the whole interview. And then, after I told him, the fact is I didn't know what sum I wanted. I said, $450. And he thought a little bit, he says, well, how about $475?
Mm, nice.
And then I said, okay. And then he says to me, made a remark I never forgot. He says, we don't care what you are as long as you do your work. That was a clue that they were tolerant of anybody that came in as long as they did their job.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So about a month later, after I had worked on a drawing for a particular project, the man in charge was a Dane, an older man, very nice man. He came over and said, because of your drawing, you were able to get the job.
Great.
So that made me feel great. So you can see there was no discrimination against because I was Jewish.
That's good to hear. What was your job there?
What was my job?
Right.
That was a job where he worked on steel forms for dams and tunnels. I mentioned that to you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I was just a title of engineer, that's all. We had draftsmen also work there. Well, we made the routine for a job was to make a preliminary drawing without too much detail on it. Then if the job was accepted by the client, then we added details, and from there on, the draftsman took over and made details to assemble this form so we could use that in the field for the shop work, to put it together.
When you took off for the Jewish holidays,
what's that?
When you took off for the high holidays, that was respected and
no problem.
They just cared that
no
your drawings
problem.
Were done. And
the fact is, I can give you a little story about that. After I left Blahnik's, and I left because I was asked to another company. Maybe I got so popular. I don't know what happened. But anyway, I left Blahnik's voluntarily for a different job. And this job was for, Swindell Dressler. Of course, they got a name for a minute. And they made steel mill buildings, and we were very busy at the time. We had a lot of overtime. And when it came to the holidays, I just took off. So one day, I was called in the office by the top boss and my local boss. They wanted to see me. So they said to me, when's the next holidays? And I remember distinctly what I said to them. I said, come hell or high water, I'm taking off. They said, oh, come back here. We want to make arrangements for you so you can take off the holidays without losing any pay.
That's great.
So how was that?
Mm-hmm.
So another time, I told you I took off, and I was asked to work overtime. I said, okay. And I was the only one out of a big staff of about, I don't know how many fellas there, 40 fellas at least, maybe more. I was the only one that night to work overtime, and I was handing a roll drawing. It had nothing to do with my job. It was completely foreign to me. I'm like, what's going on here? That went on for four or five nights, evening, and I worked overtime. And I just, it dawned on me afterwards, it was a deliberate method of making me, giving me more money to make up for the loss of time I worked. So what do you call that? That's not discrimination.
No.
Maybe.
Ideal.
Well, maybe my work was so, they like my work so well that they decide they want to maybe appease me a little bit, make sure that I was happy so I wouldn't leave. So I left with a good name.
What about co-workers, Dave?
Co-workers, I got along fine with everyone, no problem. I can't remember one Jewish fellow in that total group of fellows. There were Italians and Slovaks, there were everything. But if they make any difference, go along fine. It seems that if you knew your work and work with these fellows amicably, it's all that really matters.
Did that ever change, or?
Did it change? Well, then I left Swindale Dress, I went to the city. And there, I was asked to go, despite the fact that I was a Republican in a Democratic organization. But I got along fine with everybody. And fact is, they'd have parties occasionally. And I didn't want to join in the party right in the office itself because of the food situation. Mm-hmm. But there were always a couple young ladies there who knew how I felt about eating. And they made sure that they would provide something so I would be happy.
Yes.
And they never asked for it. So they went out of their way to satisfy me. That means something too. So when it came to the fact that I'm Jewish, I feel that it has no great impact on anybody if you treat them right and go work along with them, and they'll respect you for it. The fact is, the more observant you are, and I think the more respect they have for you. That's been my experience anyway.
Mm-hmm. And then more problems being a Republican.
Would you say that?
Republican. Yes. Better not talk politics, huh? Mm-hmm. I was a GDI when I was in college. You know what a GDI is? A goddamn independent.
All right.
So when I became a voting citizen, politics meant nothing to me. I voted for the man I thought was a proper man.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what it should be, I feel.
How did you get appointed? How did you get appointed to the city?
How did I get appointed? I wasn't
asked.
I worked for Sindwell Dressler, working on steel mill base, structural steel work.
Okay.
While I was working there, I got a call from the superintendent from Bureau of Building Inspection to work. He called me repeatedly, asked me to leave my job and work for him because they needed an engineer. And I kept making excuses, but I finally figured, well, how many steel mills can you build? How long will they last? Well, maybe if I change to a different type of work, I'll be better off. So I finally agreed to be nice to the man and take his job offer. And the man who called me, by the way, is an Irishman. His name is O'Toole, and my name is Weinberg. So you ask how the relations are between Jew and Gentile, you can see it was very good.
Very nice.
I think a reputation is just very important, and it breaks down barriers as far as religion or ethics are concerned.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mean by ethics, I mean the ethical
ethnic
background.
Mm-hmm.
Ethnic.
Yeah, yeah, I said the wrong word, ethics.
Mm-hmm. So you went to the Bureau, to the building inspection as an engineer?
I went there in a top position, chief engineer for the Bureau of Building Inspection. So it wasn't just another little job.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very important job and a very responsible job. And that required knowledge of structural work and the building code requirements. But I never really worked with the code requirements until I got that job, and I had to learn it on the job, actually.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as my knowledge of structure is concerned, I had that with a good background, experienced background.
Did you do a lot of traveling, or you stayed within?
It was an office job.
It was an office job. Okay.
And I had to issue permits and examine plans. But we had a number of inspectors who had questions every day, and they'd come to me for questions on structures. And if they had problems in the field, I went out in the field to help them, to analyze the situation and make a decision. You asked whether I traveled. Well, this is a city job, and our work consisted of work within the city limits, nothing outside the city.
Would you say in a given week, what extent would you drive out to a particular building site within the city of Pittsburgh?
Under the letter.
I'm sorry. Within a given week, yeah. On average, how many days or hours or whatever would you spend going out to an actual site? Was it maybe once a month?
I just spent the regular time during my office time. That was from 8 o'clock till approximately 4:30.
Yeah,
so
I
didn't work in the outside time on a job.
But I mean,
what your question was?
In a week, would you usually have to travel to one building site to help some inspector?
Oh, well, that's pretty hard to say.
Was it random?
Well, sure, there was no scheduled events. When things occur, well, then you went out to look at it. So there was nothing scheduled. So you had to have a pretty good background of not only the code, the structures, and you had to be able to analyze the situation and make a decision. And they depend on me to do that.
Do you remember any particular buildings or issues that came up with some famous buildings? Some of the, were you there during the Renaissance, the first Renaissance? Any buildings that we or someone else might recognize?
So many events have happened over the course of 23 years, and you ask me a question like that, and I can't think of anything offhand, but
nothing like the golf. I don't even the golf building. Remember,
well,
worked on.
You're talking about the golf building. Well, across the street is the U.S. Steel building.
Okay.
I remember that was erected, and we made a visit to the building before it was finally completed. Where I was on the top floor in a very mild day, comparably mild day, and when I was on the top floor, I saw these construction workers putting some steel framing together, and I was told they were Indians, American Indians, and they were climbing around like monkeys. And that wind was howling up there. If you died on the ground, there was no wind. You talk about that, that's nothing serious, just a little event during a course of observation. But I've seen cases where I saw earth movement, the soil movement, and caused cracks in buildings, things like that. There's so many things that happened, I just can't recall without sitting down trying to remember.
So are there any other buildings that you kind of always remember that you inspected, or there's just been too many? Just random Jenkins Arcade, something in Market Square, a department store, a medical office building, PPG Place.
Appraise? No, we didn't do anything like that.
PPG.
No, we didn't appraise anything.
No, not appraise, but like PPG or the department stores. Do you remember? They were probably built a long time ago.
Yeah, you're concerned with big buildings. That's it seems. When you talk about building, you think, well, everything is a big building. It isn't.
Okay.
Don't forget, there's a lot of residences, little apartment buildings, commercial buildings. There's all kinds of structures.
Right.
See, and you're oriented towards big buildings. The city is comprised of all sorts of things.
Okay.
From shacks, from doghouses to high rises, and you had to know about all this stuff.
Okay.
Where did you have your training in structural engineer? From Carnegie Mellon? I mean, from Carnegie Tech?
Well, when you go to college for structural work, I took a course in civil engineering. And that's a wide branch. You can work with hydraulics. You can work with steel. It's a big, wide field. But I got a job when I first got out with a Corps of Engineers in flood control. I mentioned that previously.
Yes, right.
But it was highly specialized work. It was interesting. I liked it, but I knew there was no future to be just confined to that one subject.
Sure.
That's why I moved. Then, actually, an engineer gets a basic knowledge through his studies, learning how to solve problems. But then he really learns when he goes out into the field and works for somebody, some company, some organization has jobs to do. And that's when you really learn. So I think I learned by moving around a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed the people who stayed in one job as long as they could, afraid to move, were not the successful people. They mm-hmm. just had a job, made a living, and that's about what it amounted to. So I was told a long time ago by one man, an older fellow, when I worked for the Corps of Engineers, not to stay in the job. And it was shocking to hear that at the time because I was a young guy just out of school. And I figured, oh, this is a good job for life. That's the attitude you have when you first start out. And he says, no, that's not the thing to do. You go out and get experience and you'll be in demand. You'll be able to get a good job the way you make a better living. And he was right. This particular fellow, by the way, was a student of the Greek language, an American, but he used to study the Greek language. He was a brilliant man. I don't remember his name at all because he was only there a very short time, and he moved.
He moved on. He took his own advice. Do you remember any housing areas, or remember
any what?
The parts of Squirrel Hill that you remember being built up?
A housing square that went up?
Whole neighbor sections of Squirrel Hill that were built?
They were built. I remember one building in particular over the parkway. I don't know what they call it now. It was built, it was supposed to be a certain elevation. They went beyond it without being labeled about it. That was a little problem we had. And then after it was built, they had structural problems in the foundation, and the building itself wasn't the best, so we had problems. That was in Squirrel Hill off of Mount Royal Road.
Is it still there?
Who else? And then here's another one, the Imperial House.
Yes, I know which one.
The Imperial House.
I know
the superintendent told me that when they started digging the foundation, that's area below the ground, they found a coal mine, and they found tracks with a coal carrier. What are these little cages that roll on the tracks?
Mm-hmm.
Imagine that. That was hard to believe. That was the Imperial House. And there was some other project. What was it? See, I have to refresh my memory. There's so many things that have happened during the course the time I was there, and it was very interesting. There was always something happened. And I met so many people, so many architects and developers, and all sorts of contractors. No matter where I go in the city of Pittsburgh, even today, people say, hi, Jack. I don't even know who they are. There's so many people know about me and heard about me and worked with me, you know. So that gives you a little bit of satisfaction.
What were the years you were involved again? You would have given us
this list of the city.
Yeah.
Even today, you noticed I was busy on the telephone when you walked in.
Yes.
I was talking to one fellow, and while I was talking to him, somebody else was trying to interrupt the phone call. And a fellow from URI was talking to me, and I asked him how he got my. He asked me to do a certain job to inspect something. And I said, how'd you get my name? He said, the inspectors recommended you very highly that you're this and you're that and all that stuff, you know.
Oh.
So you asked an original question, how do you get along with other people because I'm Jewish? It seems it had nothing to do with being Jewish. If you did your job and you showed them the respect that they deserve, We got along fine with him. That's all that mattered. How's that sound? Patriotic?
Sounds good.
Sounds
it's true.
The way it should
it's
be,
true.
Doesn't it? Tell me, to what extent were you involved or concerned about the coal mines under Squirrel Hill in general?
I don't hear your question.
To what extent were you concerned about the coal mines under Squirrel Hill and under the city?
Do I complain about it?
Or no, was that part of your job, or you had to be concerned, or...
No. The city, this building, especially department, is not responsible for designing of a building.
Okay.
But the man who designs a building, engineers, architects, they have to have the responsibility of that job. To get the permit, we're supposed to investigate to see that they have performed their service as they should. When it came to foundation problems, for instance, if you find a coal mine, we weren't responsible to see whether that was a perfectly safe place. The Department of Environmental Resources, they could tell you whether or not they'd approve something like that. But we had cases where, in a small residential buildings, one or two family dwellings, where they had foundation problems. They couldn't build the usual footer 3 feet below the ground or a basement area. They had to use pilasters, you know, like long posts going into the ground.
Big
buildings did that. They always do that. But there were many cases like that. That in many cases, there is plenty of coal mines in the area. Mm-hmm. The one in Mount Washington was built over a coal mine. That whole area has coal under it. But if you can prove, in some cases, small buildings, residential buildings, one family house, for instance, if you're about 100 feet above the coal mine, they consider it safe.
Okay.
A lot of problems.
What about any other buildings in Squirrel Hill that you remember?
Squirrel Hill. Why are you concentrating on Squirrel Hill?
I thought that might be interesting in part of the Jewish community, or Oakland, anywhere. I'm just, let's see where else.
You know, you're asking me a question as though I had rapid recollection, but I don't, because it's happened over a long period of time, and I've forgotten what's happened in the past. So I really can't tell you much. If someone named a particular subject, I could probably remember something.
Oh, what about the University of Pittsburgh building and redoing?
Zoning?
Did you remember inspection?
Building inspection works with zoning, but they have no jurisdiction over them. If you want to erect a building, you have to first have approval from zoning.
Okay.
If it's a residential area, you can put a residence there. If it's a commercial building, then zoning will probably say you can't do it. Now, there's a case of down here, you're talking about Squirrel Hill. On near Alder Dice High School, that's Tilbury and Ford Avenue. I remember a man wanted to open office for a dental office. That's actually a business in a residential area. So he was able to go before the board, or the zoning board of adjustment, and ask for approval to operate a dental office. So cases like that is, or for instance, a person wants to teach piano or something of that sort. It's a minor thing, minor business. So they usually give permission or something like that in a residential area. But zoning controls that. Has nothing to do with building inspection.
Okay, I think we're almost done with this side. We'll let it go out, and then we'll turn on the other side.
What's all this got to do with
should I turn on the other side? Let's let
yes.
it run out.
Either way.
We won't go right away from the beginning.
Right.
This you just said a lot of interesting things.
Very much.
I have.
Yeah, you don't know
to me, it's dull routine stuff.
Yeah, but people don't know that experience.
I could tell you a lot more, I just skip it.
Why?
That's going to be what we want to hear.
I was interested with the University of Pittsburgh. Do you remember they redid like the Falk, you know, the medical centers and the different school. I was wondering if you remember any building stories when they were remodeling or when Pitt was growing. Did you work with them?
Well, there was one building over. They made additions to our existing buildings. I remember one case like that. And then you know, the latest one that I could talk about.
Maybe we should do it on the other side.
Yeah, but it has to run out.
Okay.
Is the parking problem in Oakland.
Yes.
That's a tremendous problem. You can't park a car there, and you can't even buy parking sometimes. So there's a big complaint about the Sailors and Soldiers Memorial Hall taking up a lot of space, and it's a very valuable space that can be used for other purposes. They're concerned about parking. So they solve the problem by tearing up the lawn, digging below the lawn, and made a big parking lot there underneath. And they recovered the whole thing as though nothing ever occurred. And they still had the same appearance as before.
Yes.